Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. I am Alex, and with me, as per usual, is James.
Yes, hello.
And your microphone recently got damaged in a shootout in the cabin full of Nazis, but if you haven't figured out what we're talking about by that intro, we were talking about Breaking Bad. The finale was last night. We each watched it, and James, being the bigger MacGuffin fan of Breaking Bad, what did you think about it, James?
I was happy with it, I guess. I was satisfied. Obviously, a lot of anticipation going into it, but yeah, it was good. I mean, nothing really surprising, but you know, I think successful. I think it's definitely the show that I had the most anticipation for any episode, really, at least that I can think of as an adult. So, yeah, lots of expectations, but I feel like I was satisfied enough.
Okay.
What did you think?
I was initially, I was trying to figure out why I wasn't a huge fan of it as it ended. And I sort of, like, you know, I spent most of last night and most of today thinking about it. And I like it more now, having sort of putting the pieces together. But I was sort of underwhelmed because the thing that I love the most about Breaking Bad is the way it sort of played with information. And I think this is kind of why I wasn't crazy about a lot of the first few seasons, was that the things I loved about Breaking Bad is when you know, one character knows something that the other doesn't, and one character, usually Walt, is playing on that. And this was sort of an episode where it was the easiest to predict, which is my favorite thing about Breaking Bad has been sort of the way it's been unpredictable. And, you know, I think, like, and the parts I loved about the finale the most were the parts I didn't see coming, like the him going to the house of his former partners at Grey Matter. I thought that was far and away the best part of the episode to me.
And I think the only genuine surprise out of the whole episode.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the speech where he's telling Skyler, "I did it for me," I think that's mildly surprising.
Yeah, that's true.
Not as surprising as the Grey Matter part, but and then, like, because I remember I had so many conversations about Breaking Bad in the week leading up, and I was like, okay, Lydia's going to get the ricin and stevia, because they've mentioned stevia way too many times for Breaking Bad to do nothing with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, Junior's breakfast never came of anything.
Yeah, that's fun. Lydia and Stevia, I was like, he's going to use that gun, but he's not going to use it like Scarface. He's going to do something with it. And even they kind of knew that was obvious, and that they showed us building his machine, you know, like they weren't trying to tease us with it. And I think that is what really took the tension out of the final shootout for me. It wasn't like most Breaking Bad episodes would be, you know, he's reaching for the red car keys. Most Breaking Bad episodes would be like, we don't know what he will do once he gets those car keys. We don't know why that's important, but yeah, we know why it's important, you know? And I think that was sort of that took all the tension of the shootout to me. But the things I did like were sort of thematic things that I felt the show did a good job in wrapping up. And I think part of my, I don't want to say unhappiness, but lack of enthusiasm, I think, at the end of the show last night, just as it ended, was based on the fact that I couldn't really put together what the show's end point was. And it is really, really emphasized throughout the episode. And the more I think about it, the more I like it. And I mean, it's right in the last shot that Walt did it all to himself. You know, he dies by his own hand. And I thought that was interesting. And the more I've thought about it, the more I like it. And I think it's a very good episode and a very good end to a show that I think was certainly very well put together. You know?
Right. Yeah. I have to go back to the fact that it's so unusual to think about something for this long and then have it. Like, I can't see I mean, I guess I wanted to be blown away by it, but I, you know, I think that was too much of an expectation to have.
Like, yeah, no, exactly.
There are kind of just a lot of things that felt like we had been waiting a long time for them and had figured them out, but now we got them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, with getting the money through the Schwartzes to the family was, you know, clever and a nice surprise. And, you know, I think it would have been nice to have one or two more moments like that really came out of nowhere. Like, as you said, if we didn't see him building that machine, I think that would have been another one. Even though we kind of, you know, started to piece it together with the way he drove his car and things like that, I think that that was an opportunity for one more genuine, pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and but I think the point of the scene of that, because I'm sure that was a discussion, the point of showing him building that machine is, and this is the theme of the whole episode, is that Walt is in control. And this whole episode, once he gets those car keys in the cold open, you know, he's fumbling with that car. And then the second he gets those keys, you know, he says just something like, just get me home and I'll do the rest, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And the second he gets those keys, turns the car on, he, you know, he just punches that window and all the snow falls off it. And it's just like, Walt is in control. And that's what the whole episode is about. And that's sort of the end game for the show. It's that Walt did this to himself. Walt made choices, and these are where his choices left him. They left him without a family, without his life. Cancer isn't what kills him. Theoretically, it would have eventually, sooner probably than later. But his actual cause of death is a bullet from his own hand, by extension of his automated gun. And the fact that they show him building that machine is sort of just further emphasizes how in control he is.
Yeah.
I
think the last few seasons, the last few episodes of this, whatever, half of a season part B, especially Granite State, the episode right before this, seemed to be about things getting out of control for Walt and it really getting away from him now.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, Hank being killed, which I think was, you know, one of the best parts of this season. I love that it was very much out of Walt's hands at that point.
Yeah.
And
then he immediately tries to get power back by telling Todd to kill Jesse, or Todd and his uncle.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just think the last little bit is about things spinning out of control, and this episode is about him getting control. It's about him kind of pulling the chute and saying, I know this cancer is going to get to me soon, even though that's kind of been a thing for 4.5 seasons, but
yeah,
to varying degrees. But it's kind of him really going for it this time. Sort of the idea from the beginning was, oh, he has cancer, he has nothing left to live for, he can do whatever he wants, he can risk himself making all this money that his family is going to need. Mm-hmm. But this last episode, it really seems as though he is fully given into that for the next, like, I have a day to live, or I have, you know, one drive home and then one action and then I'm done.
Exactly. And he keeps talking about, you know, what happens tomorrow, what happens tonight. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a very real timeline. So he is, yeah, he's in control in a way in that he's going all out, you know, right now. Like, this is it. I, you know, to set up a gun that's likely going to shoot at you, you're kind of anticipating that this is over.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Another thing I loved about the scene with the Schwartzes was just sort of it further drove home the idea of his decisions. Like, what was the reason that he was no longer a part of Grey Matter? I remember being explained back in like season two, maybe. But like, why did he left Grey Matter under his own power, right?
Yeah, I can't even recall. I think part of the speculation is that there was something between he and Gretchen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I remember that.
Obviously, she's married to Elliot now, and they're all involved in the company in the beginning. So I think he kind of takes himself out of that situation.
Okay, yeah. And then,
he has some bitterness about it, though. I mean, he's yelled at Gretchen, well, you cut me out. Like, I think he expected something, even though he took himself out.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of what, again, I like that so much about the scene with the Schwartzes in the finale is the sort of contrast to the life he potentially could have had. And we also get a flashback to the life that he did have with Skylar and Flynn and you know, pre-Holly, but and even just the way that the Schwartz's living room is sort of lit before they know that Walt is there, you know, there's a very split down the center. They're in the kitchen and it's lit totally differently than the part of the room that Walt is in. Yeah. And it's sort of like, well, he could have had this, but this is sort of, and he even had a version of this. And yeah, cancer was certainly out of his control, but you know, there were other ways to do this. And, you know, he did this to himself and he did this to his family and he did this to Jesse and, you know, Jane and Andrea.
Everybody on those airplanes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hank and, yeah, everybody in the show.
Right. Yeah, and we also kind of get a similar scene where Walt's having that discussion with Skylar after she gets off the phone and they do that reveal where Hera's behind the pillar the whole time, but then we also get that shot of the pillar right down the middle separating the two of them, even when they're in the same place, and kind of everything's out on the table. It's still kind of irreconcilable.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that reveal a lot, even though I thought they used like a distractingly wide lens. There was so much distortion in the shots of their the living room, those wide shots. But I loved that reveal. I thought it was great.
Yeah. So you mentioned Hank. How did you, we haven't really talked about, I mean, we did our kind of big Breaking Bad podcast at the end of 5.5.
We did a mini-sode at the end of last summer's half season, and we did a full podcast on the first four seasons.
Okay. So we haven't talked about the shootout that Hank died in, or Hank's death, really.
Right.
How did you feel about that kind of cliffhanger ending to an episode that we haven't seen quite as much in Breaking Bad, especially mid-season?
Well, we do kind of get some cliffhangers. I mean, I know the Jesse shooting Gale is very much the end of a season. It's the end of season 3, I believe. The other one, the one that sprung to mind to me was I don't even remember who Walt hits with the Aztec, but I think it's season 2 or season 3.
Yeah.
And Walt kills those two guys or hits them with the Aztec and then shoots at least one of them in the head and then turns to Jesse and tells him to run. And then that's the cut to black. I think that was a pretty solid cliffhanger.
That's less of a cliffhanger than this, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
We know those people are dead.
Yeah, fair enough. But no, it's just I don't know. I was fine with it. It's a pretty serialized show. So. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really have any feelings one way or another. I wanted to watch the next episode.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about Hank and Jesse teaming up and kind of becoming Walt's undoing?
I liked it. It felt correct. You know, yeah, I liked it, and I thought it was well done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was cool that kind of for everything Walt has done in his criminal life, as, you know, as Heisenberg, and that his compartmentalized life that he has for so long in this show.
Yeah.
That he kind of got away with all of that, at least inside that world. Like he killed Gus and, you know, Tuco and Mike and all these other people he's come into contact with being essentially meth kingpin by the end of things.
Yeah.
But it was,
and still even like the legacy of Heisenberg is, you know, a meth king that, yes, died in his meth lab, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was for what the public knows, that's still very much the case.
Exactly. Like even those last batches of meth, he gets credit for them.
Yeah, as we saw, Badger thought it still was him. So
yeah, exactly. By the way, just quick interruption to your point. Thank you so much, Vince Gilligan, for shoehorning in Badger and Skinny Pete one more time.
One more time.
I was so certain we were done with them after the Star Trek
thing. Oh, yeah. I was genuinely surprised. Like, I didn't, even before Star Trek, I didn't know if we'd see them again. Like,
yeah.
It seemed, especially this last episode, it seemed like they had so much to do that we weren't going to get kind of those nice little bonuses, like some Huel or some Badger and Skinny Pete.
Exactly. I was even on the fence about whether or not we'd get some Marie, you know?
Right.
Or Walt Jr. I wasn't certain we'd get Walt Jr. We barely did.
Yeah, not a lot, but it's, you know, it had its function.
Yeah, exactly. You were talking about Jesse and Hank working together.
Yeah, it's more so Hank, I guess, but it's the way that Walt got away with that lifestyle, and it was his family, like, it's who he really was. It was Walt, not Heisenberg, that ended up getting caught. You know, yeah. it was, you know, even though Hank is DEA and had been hunting Heisenberg, you know, he did a lot of detective work around that case, but always from the other end of trying to work back, you know, who is Heisenberg, not we have this person who need to attach him to Heisenberg. I just thought it was very interesting that it was that family relationship that did him in. And, you know, it wasn't the life of crime. It was lying in his regular life.
Yeah.
And all of, you know, the second cell phone and all these things, you know, kind of caught up with him. And it was something that just Hank being his brother-in-law, being in his house, you know, going through his books, you know, and even after that, Hank does do a lot of detective work. And as I said before that, he does a shitload of detective work, but,
yeah.
You know, it was that double life. It was that lie that I think did Walt in, and him trying to be two people. And we see that in the final episode when Skyler's saying, you know, don't give me that bullshit about doing it for your family. And he says, no, I did it for me. Like,
yeah,
he was always Heisenberg under there. Like, it's not as though the situation changed who he was. It just kind of facilitated who he was to really function at that level, you know, because he is so smart, he is so devious, as we see, especially in 3, 4, and 5 of this show. He always kind of was that person all along, and it was impossible to hide that, and it came out through his personal life before it did through his criminal life. And police and cancer and gunfire, like all those things kind of got to him at the exact same time, because he couldn't possibly separate these things anymore. And it was Jesse from his criminal life and Hank seemingly from his personal life that teaming up was enough to bring him down. So
I
enjoyed that was the what did him in.
Yeah, and I mean, you could argue that by the time Jesse actually fully turns against Walt, they are close enough to be considered, you know, at least members of each other's personal life, you know?
Yeah, just from how many times they've crossed paths.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they have had some pretty emotional conversations over the years, mostly Walt listening to Jesse more than the opposite. But
yeah, it's there. And so speaking of that relationship, was Walt kind of experiencing a lot of pride for Jesse or for himself in the end there as he walks through the lab? Or is it just kind of an appreciation of one of his favorite things in life being chemistry? And or is he looking at all these things and thinking, this is going to be my legacy, even though this isn't my lab, this is the legend that I've inherited?
Yeah, it's partially love of chemistry for sure. I don't think it's necessarily pride in Jesse, maybe a little bit, but I don't know. He's done so many things actively against Jesse's best interests that I sort of feel like it can't be anything positive to do with Jesse. And I mean,
you don't think that they have he thinks positively of Jesse by the end of things?
I don't know why. Like, it's just there's just so much like. The last time they've seen each other was when he says, I watched Jane die, you know, like, so I don't know.
Yeah, but that also
was such malice. It wasn't like the almost apology we get in Fly. It was just, yeah, it was the coldest thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It could come out of that place of wanting not forgiveness, but some absolution, like just to get it off your chest.
Although, the way he said it was not to get off his chest.
I know.
The way he said it was to crush Jesse's chest.
It's been so evil.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have a hard time. I don't know. Maybe, you know, he doesn't kill Jesse. He lets Jesse live.
But only because he wants to see Need for Speed.
Exactly. I mean, we all do. But no, it's just, I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of Jesse in that last scene because he's too self-centered throughout the show, and particularly the finale is too much about his end that you know, because particularly like in the second half of these past 8 episodes, Jesse's barely in the show, you know, like it's all Walt, and Jesse's very much an afterthought at the end of the show. And Yeah, I don't think that last scene has anything to do with Jesse. Yeah.
Well, you know what scene did have to do with Jesse?
What?
Is the Heaven's Woodworking Shop scene.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that one?
Initially I wasn't crazy about it, just because I didn't, like, I knew it must have been a reference to something earlier in the series that I didn't remember. And then after the show, our friend Spring told me what it was a reference to, and I was like, okay, I guess that's sort of like, you know, maybe it sort of signifies that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a reference to something he's talking about in rehab, where he was talking about some box he made maybe when he was in high school or something.
Yeah, the project in high school.
Yeah, that he later traded for weed. And yeah, I think it's sort of maybe meant to be sort of a signifier as to where Jesse's going to end up. Maybe that he's going to try and become some sort of rehab counselor or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and just that box to me, just it's about Jesse's potential and maybe not where he could, maybe not where he's going, but where he could have been had he done things differently. And I really like the scene that kind of flashback, flash forward, daydream sequence, whatever is referencing. I thought that was a really good speech by him. And I think Jesse is actually a really interesting character, and kind of some of his addiction stuff stays in season 3 and 4 and just wasn't a big enough thing in 5.
So yeah,
it's kind of swept under the rug a little bit, but I thought it always was a good thread for him, and definitely an essential part of a character that I really enjoyed. So,
yeah, and I mean, addiction runs very much throughout the show. Even with Walt at the end, it's sort of an addiction to what he did, like that speech where he says, "I did it for me," to Skylar. He talks about it. I was good at it. It made me feel alive. Like, it made me feel alive is like a phrase that people use for drugs, to describe the reason that they do drugs. And, so addiction more so than just drugs has always been a through line for the show. And it's very much what connected Walt and Jesse, or it has connected Walt and Jesse, or Heisenberg and Jesse, very closely throughout the show.
Right.
Even though, you know, Walt never has substance problems.
Yeah. Just in that little few sentences there, you can tell it's some kind of feeling that, you know, this is his drug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though he never touches meth. Visually, did you like Uncle Jack's brains being shot onto the lens?
I loved it. That shot actually was kind of great, again, to further sort of emphasize what the show is trying to drive home as its endpoint. It was never about the money, because Jack's, as he's getting shot, says something along the lines of, "You'll never get the money if you kill me."
Yeah.
And even before he finishes that sentence, Walt's shooting him in the head. I love that, no pun intended, shot. And the blood splatter, I don't think it made me like it any more or any less. It was more the sort of idea of the shot that I liked a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I really like the blood on the lens too, but
yeah,
I think that helped me.
Yeah. Okay.
So speaking of the Nazis,
yeah,
the Uncles of Anarchy,
yeah.
did you hear this thing that was going around, this theory, I guess, 2 weeks ago, I guess, because it would have been when the uncles are watching Jesse's confession tape and he kind of rats on Todd for shooting Drew Sharp?
Yep.
Did you hear a lot of the kind of reviewers and on the internet mostly were saying that the way that they were watching his tape and everything that the Uncles of Anarchy, sorry, you know what I mean, the neo-Nazis are, kind of represent the bad Breaking Bad fans. Did you hear anything about this?
No, I will say I don't read very much about Breaking Bad.
Okay, so that they were kind of, it was kind of an in-joke about them being the bad type of Breaking Bad fans, like not the ones who really get the show, the kind of bandwagon people who hopped on and love the violence and the drugs, but hate episodes like Fly and hate Jesse's kind of emotional arc, especially near the end of things.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the way that the Nazis are very violent and unemotional is the way that kind of the worst Breaking Bad fans act. You know, they don't care about the emotional storylines. They don't like the slow bottle episodes like Fly with the character development. They just watch the show because it's popular and there are some explosions and gunfights.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that idea?
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the intent. I don't really think it would have been. But Vince Gilligan and the writers of Breaking Bad have always been so conscious of the viewers, all throughout the show's run, particularly in this last season, that it wouldn't surprise me. But I think it's not like it was out of character for Todd's uncle and all them to be doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very much, you know, true to the characters they've set up, you know?
Right. And what other moments do you think that they've been very aware of the viewers?
I think the speech that ends Ozymandias, the phone call with Skyler, because that was set up very much to voice basically what, like, if you read that speech, it reads like something that somebody theoretically could have posted on a message board about how much they hate Skyler. And the whole point of that scene was Walt's tears are sort of meant to signify that he's doing this on purpose. He knows what he's doing. And you can even sort of see on Anakin Skyler's face by the end of the about halfway through the speech, probably that she's like, oh, he's trying to get me off the hook as best he can.
Right.
And that was sort of the whole point of the speech and or the phone call. And yeah, but it's so hateful when you just sort of listen to it and don't sort of take in the whole frame.
Right.
And yeah, it's sort of, I'm sure there was some sort of, at least judging by some of the critics I checked in on Twitter at the end of that episode, some critics were kind of frustrated immediately by the way some fans were taking it, that it was just sort of like that people,
finally just thought, tell her.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a very much a and I think that's sort of a pretty, because I think that's a great scene in the show, and certainly of more importance to the show's ending than the scene of the Uncles of Anarchy watching the DVD. And yeah, I think both of those are pretty good examples of that type of fan service.
Okay. Since we haven't talked that much, since the end of 5A, I guess we should mention the increased screen time and enjoyability of Todd.
Yeah. I'm a huge Jesse Plemons fan in general.
I am now.
Yeah, exactly. Todd is so fascinating and so watchable, particularly in the, he was enjoyable in the first half of season 5, but there was just so much more for him to do in the second half, and he's just so weirdly magnetic and so calmingly horrifying, and I don't know,
not tons of like big emotional scenes, because that's not really Todd's thing. Like,
yeah,
part of what makes him so oddly fascinating is his lack of emotion and the way he can, you know, shoot Andrea or threaten a baby and be so calm and collected about it.
Yeah, and even going back to that DVD confession scene that you mentioned, when Jesse talks about Todd killing Drew Sharp, Jesse's crying. They cut to Todd. Todd's just like, "Oh, is that a thing? Like, am I supposed to feel something about killing this child?"
Yeah, you know? And he kind of smiles a little bit, like he's so happy his uncles are going to hear that he did something like so cold and didn't pause to think about it for a second. And yeah, it just shows you what a kind of demented upbringing and surrounding that guy deals with. But
yeah,
his scene with Lydia when they're at the diner the first time,
in the second last episode,
is so entertaining to me.
I know we talked about this, but just right from the first shot where we just see him in his buttoned up shirt,
it's like so baby funny. Blue buttoned up silk shirt. It just looks so out of place trying to function in normal society.
Yeah.
So are we to understand that he and Lydia have any kind of relationship?
They certainly don't. He wants some sort of relationship.
But not even near the end?
No.
Why is she calling him when Walt picks up after the shootout? slash
she wants to make sure they've killed Walt.
Oh, okay, and he called her right before that, and that's why she's saying, "Is he gone?"
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because that's the—I mean, that's what the their conversation, like, immediately what they talk about after Walt leaves the cafe towards the beginning of the episode.
I love that he has a special ringtone for it. Oh.
Just his ringtones in general.
Yeah, it's true. For such a psychopathic, like, seemingly simple human being, he's very complex and has great phone DJing ringtones.
Yeah, Todd's ringtone game is on point for sure.
Yeah. Do you think that sometime over the past few months, this show has broken the record?
Yes, whatever the sentence ends up going, the answer is yes.
It broken the record that we're never going to be able to measure for people binge-watching a show at the same time?
Well, I think it's conceivable that Mad Men will top it, but
it hasn't
certainly for the same time, yes. Because, yeah, I can't even think of a comparison. Like, people that have watched The Wire, like, people have watched The Wire over such a long period of time, people have caught on to that, and yeah. That's the big binge-watching show for people that like Breaking Bad and stuff like that, you know?
Right. And so maybe Mad Men when they get their finale, but certainly not yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, 10.3 million watched the finales, so that's a lot of people who have caught up, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, isn't that like, wasn't Ozymandias something like 6 million, so that's 4 million more than two episodes ago?
Yeah. you have anything else about Breaking Bad?
Got one sort of thing that I think was, and it's a totally kind of, well, I guess it's not unrelated to the show, because the show had to be of a certain kind of quality for this to happen. But I think the thing I will remember the most about Breaking Bad, and that I love the most about Breaking Bad, is sort of, I think, unless this happens with Mad Men, which I really don't think it will, because I think generally people understand Mad Men. And again, I've only seen the first season of that show. But the general take on Mad Men is much less positive than, like, on an episode-to-episode basis than Breaking Bad is. I think the general consensus on Breaking Bad is that there are people that don't like it, but the people that like it understand that sort of pretty much every successive season gets better. And it's sort of this, it's a show that has a very consistent level of quality. And I mean, if you don't like episode 8 in a season, that's very rare and kind of surprising, but you know it'll get it back in episode 9, you know? And I think that's sort of what brought everybody together for these last episodes, and why the ratings were so high and even growing as the show, like, over the past 8 weeks, which I found fascinating. But and the thing that I will remember the most about the last few episodes of Breaking Bad is the fact that I was watching them live with like 10 people in my living room, which has not happened in a long time. And I sort of feel like this will be the last narrative television show where an episode of it is like an event, and you watch it when it's on, or you watch it immediately after it finishes so you can skip the commercials, just because you can't go anywhere in your sort of circle without sort of hearing spoilers. Like, people were talking about it on the radio this morning, like news radio even.
Yeah.
It had permeated culture so much in these past 8 weeks. And I think that's fascinating. And it sort of really reminded me of the way people our age have sort of embraced this new radio station in Toronto called Indie 88. People are sort of nostalgic for radio. Like, we've had so much choice over our music for the last little while that we now think radio is cool again, you know, which is so bizarre to me, but I also totally understand it. And I feel like Breaking Bad is the last show that we're going to watch like that until we become nostalgic for that feeling. You know, it's this weird combination of timing and quality on the show's part that brings people together in a very unified way that narrative TV just doesn't do anymore, because there are so many ways to watch it. And even very rarely happens in film. Like, it's you know, maybe the last time it happened was Inception or something along those lines, where these movies sort of really cross over and become a big cultural moment. And I love Breaking Bad for that. And even though I don't love the show as much as a lot of its biggest fans, I think it will always have a special place in my heart just for the fact that it sort of brought us back to the original days of TV where people would like gather in their friend's living room just because they had access to this thing. And I think that's a really powerful thing to do in this medium in 2013.
And you don't think that, I mean, the way that you say they'll embrace a you know, a radio station or some other things that have gone away or, you know, certainly shrunk. You don't think that people have kind of come back in general on wanting a shared experience of a pop culture product, and that something like Breaking Bad is not going to be loved, like is not going to exist all the time. We're not going to see a big finale like this, you know, every year. But do you really think this is going to be like one of the last in a really definite way?
Not necessarily in a definite way, and I'd love to be proven wrong. But I just sort of think I think it's amazing that this late, that this has happened. And the fact that I was, at a gathering with my parents and a bunch of their friends, and, the fact that even my 83-year-old grandpa knew what Breaking Bad was, and I was talking to my parents and all of their friends about what do you think's going to happen tonight, and that it's crossed over so much is really fascinating. But I don't think definitely it's going to happen, but I think it's 96% pure that this will happen, you know, like, or that this won't happen again, at least not for quite a while, because it's such an impossible combination of things that need to happen. Like, it has to be people catching on to the show at the same time so that they can get caught up in order for the show to be important when it's actually still on. And it has to be of a certain level of quality, and it has to be interesting in a way that crosses over for multiple generations. And and like I said, I think Mad Men has a chance to do that, but I also don't think it will, because I think Mad Men appeals to more people. I don't think it appeals, or maybe at least the same number of people, but I don't think it appeals to those people with the same amount of power as Breaking Bad appeals to people.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, you know,
and that's very much like just the way Breaking Bad is constructed. It's meant to draw you in, and it's meant to not necessarily confuse you, but throw you for a loop every couple episodes. And that's what keeps you coming back.
Yeah. I think there just is. And I do agree with what you're saying. I think that there is, I would emphasize that there is a kind of desire for more shared experiences, as we kind of see how beneficial it is to have something, you know, like Netflix and things we can watch whenever we want. But it's a combination with that and a big social event that makes, you know, what made this hit so big. Like, people, you know, 10 million people viewed it, tuned in because they had a chance to catch up with all that stuff. Like, I think it's the combination.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, people definitely want the social event. It's just sort of that, and I mean, you know, there's, it's not like Breaking Bad is the only thing on TV that does this. American Idol's finales probably consistently get more viewers and are just as much talked about, but just sort of in different circles. People definitely want that collective experience. I just think that this very specific, or this kind of collective experience that Breaking Bad provided, is so rare. And, you know, it's sort of like, when ER was a sensation, you know, it's that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's a critically acclaimed show that crosses over between generations and that people are super passionate about. And that's sort of what makes it the success that it is, and sort of makes it a legendary TV show.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. I want to run an idea by you that I was thinking about, and I don't think it can work on TV just because of some programming issues, but...
All right.
If there was a, you know, say Vince Gilligan just got kind of like a blank check from Netflix to do his next show.
Yeah.
And we know that's not the case, because he's going to do some CBS show that he's been thinking about since the early 2000s. And now people care about it because he's Vince Gilligan now. Which is fine and good for him. And I hope the best. So it's a show that comes out, you know, Sunday, you know, 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, 9 o'clock, that you can tune into, just like Breaking Bad, but it has an indefinite number of episodes. like it, they do have it all, you know, recorded and edited. They know exactly how many episodes exist, but you don't know how many they're going to be. Like, it's going to be somewhere between 13 and like 25.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be an interesting thing? Because as much as it is awesome to have this whole build up for a finale, it can only be so surprising because you know it's going to end. Whereas, you know, a death or a big finish can be truly shocking if you kind of had a chance that there's going to be one next week and maybe the week after that as well.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. It'll never happen, though.
No, I know.
I mean, that's just how marketing works. They can't market next week's episode if you're not sure that there's going to be one.
I know. I just want the best for it. And I don't want Chris Hardwick on after
it. Nobody wants Chris Hardwick on after.
Yeah, well, that's it for me.
All right.
I'm done like this series is.
Okay, we're done like Low Winter Sun. Thank you for joining us on the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, and we'll also have a full podcast on The Godfather 3 coming out on Thursday, so be sure to check back for that. Anyways, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.